Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Good morning, everyone. Merry Christmas Eve morning. As you have been hearing in the news, the Bernard Madoff alleged Ponzi scheme has now claimed a life. One very wealthy French investor living in New York apparently killed himself yesterday after losing more than $1 billion. Now, before you become the second Madoff suicide victim, stop and think, please, about things you can do to get some of your money back. There was a court ruling on this yesterday, and different victims are suing different kinds of people, not just Madoff himself. So let's talk about it. With us are Jason Zweig, personal finance columnist for The Wall Street Journal, and Gregory Sisk, a law professor at the University of St. Thomas in Minneapolis. Professor Sisk and Jason Zweig, welcome to WNYC. Good morning. Gregory Sisk, Professor Sisk, tell us about yesterday's court ruling. Who is asking for what?
Well, it's not a court ruling as yet. There's a request submitted in an administrative capacity to the Securities Exchange Commission suggesting that they should cover the losses of the investors because the SEC was negligent in failing to see the red flags in the Madoff activities as long as 10 years ago.
Suing the SEC, suing the federal government. People are actually doing that?
Exactly. Suing the federal government, setting the stage for bringing a lawsuit against the federal government and saying that the federal government regulated Madoff. They should have known about his fraudulent activities. People relied upon that oversight by the federal government, and that allowed his fraudulent conspiracy to go even further. And therefore, the federal government should step in and essentially bail out the investors.
Jason Zweig, the court ruling yesterday that I referred to, here's a New York Post version this morning. It says, Madoff victims zapped, judge limits payout. And it reads, burned investors in Bernard Madoff's alleged $50 billion Ponzi scheme were dealt a setback yesterday when a bankruptcy judge ruled the maximum cash compensation victims are eligible for is $100,000 from the outfit liquidating his now defunct firm. Are you familiar with that situation?
Well, yeah. I think what's really happening here, Brian, is that the courts are marking out the preliminary territory, and people who invested in Madoff through some kind of brokerage account, often at Madoff's own firm, are covered by what's known as SIPC, or the Securities Investor Protection Corporation, which is a sort of quasi-governmental industry group.
It's like at the end of those bank and investment bank commercials you hear, member FDIC, SIPC.
Exactly.
This is SIPC.
Yeah, and it's quite similar to FDIC coverage. It's there if you need it, but it only covers up to a certain amount. It will cover $500,000 of theft of securities from a brokerage account, but that only covers a maximum of $100,000 that was held in cash.
And this was considered cash?
Well, Mr. Madoff appears to have had a habit at the end of each reporting period of trading back all the accounts into Treasury bills. So whatever he was doing with your account in the meantime, at the end of the reporting period, you often would get an account statement that showed you were entirely in cash. Now, of course, we don't know whether he was ever executing any trades at all. We only know what he was reporting to clients, and he often was reporting that their accounts ended up in cash.
Does that make it even more curious that more of these investors, sophisticated investors, we just heard on the newscast about a New Jersey state senator who lost her life savings, that more of these sophisticated investors didn't wonder, is this legit?
Well, I did a column on this notion of sophisticated investors and suggested that it should join George Carlin's classic oxymoron, jumbo shrimp and military intelligence.
Huh.
Sophisticated investor is a very tricky term. All it really means is people who have a lot of money and are eligible to invest in accounts like the ones Mr. Madoff was running. They're still human beings, and they're subject to the same errors of human judgment as the rest of us.
Listeners, we can take your calls and online questions and comments about this. 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. We've had some people who've been burned in the Madoff scheme calling in before. Here's an opportunity to talk to a personal financial columnist for the Wall Street Journal, Jason Zweig, and a law professor, Gregory Sisk, from St. Thomas University in Minneapolis, about ways of getting your money back, at least to some degree. 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. No Schadenfreude, please, today, okay? It's the day before Christmas. I mean, come on. Anyone can post anything you want at WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show. Professor Sisk, anything more on the SIPC aspect of this?
Well, it's very limited, as was explained, and so the amount of money available will not begin to cover the total amount of losses, whereas thinking creatively, as at least one lawyer has done, about the possibility of bringing a tort suit against the federal government under the Federal Tort Claims Act holds the potential of recovering everything back, or at least recovering the basic principle that was put in. It's an uphill battle. The courts are skeptical about these kinds of lawsuits, but it's not impossible, and certainly creative lawyering at its best.
Can you think of any precedent?
There's precedent that goes both ways. There's a case in the United States Supreme Court from 20 years ago called Berkovitz, in which the parents of a child who contracted polio from the polio vaccine filed suit against the federal government, claiming that the Food and Drug Administration had negligently licensed that manufacturer to produce the polio vaccine. And the Supreme Court held in a preliminary ruling that the lawsuit could go forward. But there's also a series of cases in the lower federal courts involving employees who were injured at work who sued the Occupational Safety and Health Administration, saying that they should have discovered that there were safety violations at the workplace. And those lawsuits have invariably failed.
Adrian in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Hello, Adrian.
Hi. I'm calling. I'm a family member of Madoff Investors who took out a major loan against their Madoff account. And thinking about bankruptcy protection, I wonder in a bankruptcy suit whether there's any difference if your property disappeared because of fraud as opposed to a bad financial decision or a downturn in the market or something else.
Professor Sisk, I'll go back to you on this.
I'm not an expert in bankruptcy, but the difference between a fraud and a negligence aspect would go primarily to whether you could get beyond the company and get at the assets of the individual. And when fraud's involved, you can usually penetrate through the company to get at the assets of the individual. But if in a case like this, the individual's assets are limited as well, you can only get what's available.
Oh, I think you misunderstood my question. My family had investments in Madoff that they then used to take out a loan. And if we were the object of a bankruptcy proceeding to seize our assets, would the fact that our collateral disappeared because of theft on the part of Madoff or fraud on the part of Madoff have any effect on that?
Either of you? Go ahead, Professor.
I don't claim to be an expert on bankruptcy, but I don't think that would change the basic contours of the situation. Bankruptcy would still be a means in which you might be able to avoid paying back the loan. Now, if the loan is secured by an asset that now is worth next to nothing, that, of course, would be taken into account in the bankruptcy and might be taken into account in your favor.
Jason Zweig, anything on this before we move on?
I think Professor Sisk is right. I think the court would probably view that with sympathy, particularly if you could demonstrate that you had no inkling that you were participating in what appears to be a Ponzi scheme.
Good luck, Adrian. Now, there's another way that people are suing to try to get their money back. At least New York Law School, it sued the middleman, the money management firm that chose to invest most of the fund that they were managing for New York Law School with Madoff. That's a victim suing a victim in a way, Professor Sisk. Do you know the nature of that lawsuit?
Not familiar directly with the nature of that lawsuit, but that's what comes into play when you recommend that someone invest in a particular outfit. If you make that recommendation, and particularly if the investor is able to show that there were signs that you should have investigated, that you didn't do what we call due diligence in exploring whether this was a worthwhile investment, then you're an agent and can be held responsible for that.
Jason Zweig, one of New York Law School's arguments, I believe, is that the investment firm put so much of this particular pot of money that they were managing for the school, so much of it, almost all of it from what I've read, into the Madoff fund. So I think they're being asked to be held liable. They're asking the court to hold the middleman money management firm liable for not diversifying.
Yeah, that's my understanding of the basics of the case, and at least on the face of it, it seems like a pretty plausible argument. When you hire someone to manage your money, they should be working in your interest as a fiduciary, which means they should be treating your own money as prudently as they would treat their own.
Well, they may have thought, as a lot of people apparently thought, that this was the most prudent investment going. Low risk, moderately high, but very consistent returns. And I wonder what the client's responsibility is here. Unless it's some kind of blind trust, wouldn't they be going back to the people at New York Law School who hired them and saying, okay, this is what we're doing with your money. We want to let you know, and, you know, we want you to sign off on this, as a typical broker would call, you know, an average small investor and say,
right,
well, I think you should buy some shares of this. Should I pull the trigger?
That's what isn't entirely clear yet. We don't know in the case of all these middlemen whether they fully disclosed to their clients that what was supposed to be a diversified strategy was effectively a very concentrated one. And if you hire me to invest your portfolio in a diversified manner, and instead I put all your money in one single thing, I should tell you I've done that, and you should ask the question as to what I have done. But if the communication was inadequate, it seems to me that, you know, there could be grounds for a legitimate complaint.
Abdul in New Hyde Park, you're on WNYC. Good morning, Abdul.
Good morning. Yeah, I'm just calling because my office is right next to the Wall Street, and I just recently closed because of the downturn of the business. I'm also a real estate developer. And I've heard these stories about this because I have friends of his friends, some of them investors, but the gossip amongst them was that all of them knew this guy was doing something wrong. They knew, most of the investors knew, they're sophisticated investors. They all knew that this is their cheater, so they didn't care how he's cheating the money as long as they're getting the money.
He was their cheat.
It is, exactly. So they really didn't care that how he is getting, as long as he's consistently paying them out or whatever the amount is. I mean, most of the Zuckerman and all this guy, I mean, can you imagine having them not checking this guy? They all delivered, except the institutions. I'm not sure the institution had any ideas. The institution invested with these guys. I mean, they had any ideas, unless maybe one or two inside them had some ideas, so they inspired them to invest
uh-huh.
with this guy.
So Jason's why this
idea
is...
That this guy was cheating, doing something wrong, but they didn't care. They thought this guy had some upper hand. He'll be able to manipulate it
yeah.
and manage it.
Interesting. So this is what Abdul is hearing on the street, on Wall Street, where his firm was, Jason Zweig. What about you from the Wall Street Journal? Are you hearing any murmurings like that?
Well, it's an interesting question, and I don't think you're entirely wrong, Abdul. I mean, I think there was some of that. I don't think everyone investing with Madoff knew something was wrong. I think some people suspected. And there is some evidence that at least as long ago as 1991.
One?
Yes, 1991, 17 years ago, people had started to raise suspicions. Don't underestimate the importance of trust and personal relationships in all of this. Very wealthy, very smart people can often be taken by taken in by very foolish, almost transparent scams when they're dealing with people they know whom they trust. And this is by far not the first time that something like this has happened. Back in 1995, there was a charity scam called New Era, run by a fellow out of Philadelphia who got money out of the Rockefeller family and the former head of Goldman Sachs and Sir John Templeton, the great investor. And this kind of thing has happened repeatedly in the past. A lot of it is based on, if I know you and I trust you and you're telling me it's good, it must be good.
You can imagine the conversations that people must have been having. In these years since 2000, the stock market has been basically flat. I mean, with, you know, some ups toward the end of the period until this year, but basically flat. And this fund has been doing 10-12% every year through 9/11, through, you know, the Enron downturn and the tech bubble bursting and everything else. And I've heard some reports of people who were invested with Madoff asking each other, well, gosh, how is this continuing to do so well under these economic circumstances? And supposedly the response was always, well, I don't know, but that's Bernie, referring to the trust that you're talking about. And, you know, I'm not asking any questions. It's doing so well. Why buck it? Which, you know, almost implies, not to say that people took it to the degree that Abdul suggests, this is our cheat, so we're going to just stay in on it, but that at least there was maybe some willful denial if something looked too good to be true and they weren't following up.
Yes, and I think there's another factor here that we can't underestimate, which is if you, according to my sources, if you did question what Mr. Madoff was doing, he was not above throwing you out of
the
operation.
Fund. Really?
So,
no soup for you.
Yeah, exactly. And that clearly served as a disincentive, and word got around that if you ask Bernie too many questions, he'll punish you. So people ask a lot.
So law professor Sisk, does this increase the liability of anybody who may be suing to get their money back? If they were asking questions of themselves or among their family members or co-investors, and that can be demonstrated, that they were scratching their heads about these returns but never actually tried to investigate or never actually asked Madoff directly, do they then become a little bit more liable for their own losses in a legal sense?
Well, certainly. And we call it contributory negligence in tort, that if you contributed to the situation yourself by not acting reasonably, by not taking due care, that reduces your ability to recover. It doesn't eliminate it necessarily, though. And with respect to the trust that was placed in Madoff, another factor that needs to be brought out is that the SEC was regulating and took no action. There had been one enforcement proceeding in 2006, as I understand, in which the SEC investigated based on some complaints by a competitor and concluded that there was no fraud going on. And today, we as citizens tend to rely upon the government when it regulates. When we go and buy a pound of hamburger, we assume that that it's been inspected and that it's safe.
The government concluded that Iraq had weapons of mass destruction. Can we sue them for that? People who've lost their loved ones in the war?
Well, that's a reminder that human beings make mistakes, and the government, we all ought to remember the government doesn't always get it right. But I think there is a certain degree of everyday reliance that we all place on the government, that they are, in fact, they've got our backs on certain things, particularly with respect to us as consumers. And when it turns out not to be the case, when we find out that they failed to recall toys that are made in China that have lead, or in a situation like this, failed to shut down a fraudulent Ponzi scheme, our trust is shaken. But I suspect give it a little time and we will begin to trust in the government regulators again.
All right. People trying various ways to get their Madoff money back. We heard about suing the SEC, trying to recover under the SIPC protection, suing the middleman who invested your money. Sad times, interesting times from a legal sense as the Madoff case rolls on. Jason Zweig, personal finance columnist for the Wall Street Journal. Gregory Sisk, law professor at the University of St. Thomas in Minneapolis. Thank you both very much.
Great to be
Thank
with you.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Coming up in a minute, New Jersey's attempt to protect renters who are being evicted because their landlords are being foreclosed upon. Stay with us.